Hey everybody, my name is Walt and I'm an alcoholic. Sober tonight by the grace of God and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for that I am entirely grateful, and I think so is most of the state of New Jersey and the bordering areas. Congratulations, Jill. I don't know if you know this, but you have an auspicious sober date. And I'll tell you why. Because you actually sobered up on Bill Wilson's birthday. He was born on November 26, 1895, East Dorset, Vermont. And so you came in 115 years after Bill was born. So keep coming, and thank you for the opportunity to be here. And I'm glad I got to hear you celebrate. So I know we talk about the steps kind of in isolation, you know, when we're evaluating and analyzing them as we go through the book, but they are part of a congruous whole. You know, they're part of a series of actions that we take. So I always like to go back and level set and make sure that we're all on the same page. There's some new faces here. I'm a little intimidated because I want to put a good face on for the group that's hosting me here. And, you know, thank you guys again for the opportunity. It's always a privilege and a pleasure to be part of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to start by saying on Friday it was my high school reunion. It doesn't matter what year it was, but let's just say it was over 15 and somewhere maybe a little bit beyond that. And what amazes me to this day is how much middle-aged people can drink. I'm just like, wow, that's wow. Like, last time I saw you guys was, you know, intervals of 5 years, but, you know, like, you left off where we graduated and probably even consumed more. It wasn't a judgment. And see, that's the thing about me as an alcoholic today. I can be aware of what other people are doing, and I just look at it from the point that I am so uniquely different from most of the world when it comes to what they can consume and how they can consume it. You know, it's not a judgment, it's just a comparison, because it blows my mind. You know, there was one guy, I don't know how he got home, I don't know how he was standing, and, you know, a lot of other people, and God bless them. You know, if they can do that, and you know, that's good for them. And then my wife and I were out with some friends last night. Actually, we're at their house right here in Westfield, actually. And, you know, my wife was actually drinking whiskey. I don't think I've ever seen. We've been together a long time. And she's like, this is good. And I'm like, okay, what whiskey isn't good? You know, I mean, that's my question as an alcoholic. I mean, it's all the same to me. You know, produces the same end result. That's why I'm consuming it. You know, I'm drinking for effect. You know, she's drinking for pleasure. And somewhere I lost that ability to, you know, just slow down, ease up, and, you know, stop. And, you know, she still can. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, today she actually did some work, logged in, was, you know, typing away, doing some stuff. Never once did I see her, like, go through some shakes, like, oh, where's a bottle? I need something to drink. Like, you know, she was able to go on and continue her day without any thought or effort about alcohol. Blows my mind. You know, I don't understand that, because once I consume alcohol in any form whatsoever, you know, I'm off to the races and I'm doomed. You know, I'm doomed in alcoholic death. And I know that based on my experience. And, you know, my first step, you know, I mean, I was powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable, was really a reflection after I'd been around for a few years. And, you know, understanding that whole mental, physical dilemma, you know, this mental obsession that tells me it's okay to put this stuff into my system, and then that, you know, physical allergy, that phenomenon of craving that kicks in once it's in my body, and that I am compelled to continue to drink more and more until I start to do certain things, black out, pass out, brown out. I talked about that a little bit last week, and, you know, on it goes. But then once it's out of my system, what am I looking for? You know, I'm looking for more alcohol, you know, to deal with the ease and comfort of living life, because I don't wear life like a loose garment when I'm in active alcoholism. And, you know, how do I stop that? And I tried applying different things and tools and technologies that were at my disposal, and nothing worked until entire abstinence. But even then, that was pretty brief, because, again, the crazy thought would come up. You know, the insane thinking won out. You know, the premeditation that preceded the first drink, the mental states that precede a relapse. And, you know, my life was just continuing to go down a dark path. And, you know, I'm a Union County native. I grew up a town next door in Clark. You know, I did a lot of damage, you know, between here and there and everywhere else. You know, I just did not very nice or pleasant things to people's houses or properties. I had this kleptomania thing going on when I would be at a party. For some reason, I'd have to just steal something. Nothing of significance or value, like nutcrackers. Like, I don't know. Like, I had a thing about taking people. Like, it was like collection. Don't ask me to explain this. There was no logic, you know, behind it. It was just a souvenir for whatever reason. Probably to try to remember where the hell I was the night before. Or what I did or who might have been there. And asking my friends, how did I wind up with these nutcrackers again? And they're like, oh, you and those nutcrackers. I'm like, okay. We all have our thing, right? You know, whatever it might be. You know, but then I get to a point where I'm not well. I know I'm not well. And I know I don't fit in. I know I'm not drinking the same way that my peers are. I'm beyond hope. I'm beyond repair. I am just destitute and desperate. And I'm hopeless and powerless. I just don't know what to do. You know, and I was being very casually coaxed into Alcoholics Anonymous. But the problem was this counselor I had, one of a few that I was seeing at the time, because I needed multiples, he actually opened up the meeting book for New Jersey. Or Northern New Jersey, at least. And he actually flipped it open to the steps. Big mistake. Because in there, I saw, well, one thing, powerless, you know, unmanageability. But then the second and third, you know, I saw God in there. Like, all right, you guys are cute with your higher power thing, but I see where you're going. All right, it's a cult. You know, even when I came to meetings, I swear the money was going to some whatever. I don't know. It was like, follow the money. I'm going to see where it is. You guys are cult. You're not. We're not. I don't believe so. I haven't seen any cultish behavior. Maybe a little bit. But anyway, not on a widespread scale. Let's put it that way. But you know, the problem was that, you know, if I came to believe a power greater than me could restore me to sanity, I needed to understand what that was, and I needed a power greater than me, alcohol, Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship at large, and whatever that was. And you know, I struggled and, you know, got twisted up. I had a sponsor, God bless him, who wanted me to believe, and I talked about this last week a little, you know, wanted me to believe a certain thing, and it just didn't work. And eventually, you know, my path took me on a particular journey, an arc where I finally found something that worked for me. And then, you know, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. You know, making that decision, you know, requires some action to follow through with it. And, you know, the one thing that I forgot to talk about last week was, you know, the first requirement is that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. You know, and I am an extreme example of self-will run riot. You know, just, again, the casualties. And I'm not even talking about while I'm actively drinking. I'm talking while I was stone-cold sober, going to meetings, dry as dust and, you know, helping other people, making gallons of coffee, shaking I don't know how many hands. I used to joke about Ebola, and I stopped doing that because there was an outbreak. But anyway, you know, I just had a lot of fun, you know, early on, but then I got to the point where I was stuck with me, and the one person I didn't like was me. And, you know, having to make this decision, I didn't know what that looked like. And, you know, finally got to it, you know, brass tacks, you know, and I still use the third step prayer. I this is how crazy things were back when I first sobered up, is that I was sober for about 2 or 3 years, and I was at a 12 and 12 meeting in an afternoon up in Summit, and this guy said something about the third step prayer being in the big book. And I'm like, no, it's not, because like, I had all the answers, you know, a whole 3 years sober. You know, I knew everything. You know, you can tell me otherwise. There's someone in this room that will attest to that. But the point being is, he's like, no. And he came to me after, he's like, you know, I'm like, what are you talking about? Because the 12 and 12 was the end all be all when I got here. That was, you know, where we read the most. That's where we found most of the information. And that's what we studied a lot. There wasn't a lot of big book meetings. And he showed me, and he flipped over, you know, to page 63, you know, right in the middle. You know, and there's that prayer. And I was like, what? Blew my mind. You know, just blew my, like, what? You know, and I had been going to big book meetings on and off. There was a big one up in Watchung for a few, you know, for a number of years. And, you know, a lot of really powerful shares. But the problem was, it was a very, how do I put it, piecemeal reading. It was a couple paragraphs, and you shared, and you'd never move on from any particular. Man, this book is just falling apart. So, but anyway, that's what they did, and that's fine. But, you know, as, you know, was shared earlier, I needed something more. I needed something with depth and weight, and I didn't know what that looked like. And I'm wandering around Alcoholics Anonymous without any particular solution in my life. You know, and even after a point where I'm working with this one guy who's my sponsor, we did 2 fourth and fifth steps. You know, fourth step I didn't like, you know, from jump. I remember being in rehab and I didn't even like it then. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. There were 3 words in there that I did not like. Searching, fearless, and moral. You know, which is pretty much the essence of it all. And let's face it, I mean, I took gazillions of inventories, you know, throughout my life. Most of them were, you know, what you did to me, how you wronged me, what you took from me, you know, how you cheated on me, blah, 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 all you. There was no self-reflection on this. And it wasn't until I started working with a guy who had some information armed with the facts about himself. And, you know, he said, you know, spiritual tools laid at my feet and at our feet. And he threw my big book at me. This is probably why it looks like this today. He took it literally. And thanks, Kevin. I appreciate you throwing my big book at me. Man, what is up? I'm gonna be like wearing a monocle up here now. Okay. Wow, this is gonna be interesting. I'm gonna step on that glass. So after the third step, where is it in front of me? Okay, yeah, there we go.
Got it?
I got it. We'll see how this goes. So, you know, even after the third step, as powerful and potent as that experience was, you know, at the bottom of 63, it talks about next we launch down on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions. You know, there's a lot of words that get repeated in the big book, but I think permanent only shows up twice. You know, but it does tell me and does promise me that I can have long-term sobriety if I do certain things. You know, and it's very true. You know, and it's a lifelong process and it requires diligence. And it's so true that liquor is but a symptom, and later it says bottles are only a symbol. You know, I had to get down to causes and conditions. What was blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit? What was, you know, my resistance about? What stopped me from being one of many and just getting out of my own way and being my own worst enemy? You know, these weren't things that I came in here for. These were not questions that I could easily answer. These were not things I necessarily was searching for when I got here. All I wanted was the pain to stop. I wanted everyone off my back, and I wanted my life to stop hemorrhaging in every which way possible. And, you know, I remember coming in, jumping up and down, and saying, I want to do these steps, I want to do these steps, I want to do these steps. And I kept getting, kid, relax. It gets better. Fake it till you make it. Do a step a year. I don't recommend that to anyone at all, whatsoever. But that means Jill would just be getting to her 12th step now or just finishing it up. You know, I mean, could you imagine the insanity of that? You know, it kills me that I'm a part of a 12-step fellowship that there are, and it's fewer and fewer, but, you know, there was a big part of the swath of the area, at least my experience was, where we would say, don't worry about those things. You know, don't worry about it. Just focus on not drinking, and everything's going to be great. And how crazy it is that I'm part of a 12-step fellowship that doesn't want to talk about this 12 steps. You know, that's like me going to Home Depot and looking for a gallon of milk. I mean, I don't understand the logic of it. You know, I'm going to Home Depot for specific things. I'm coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for specific things. Again, this is my experience and my observations. And again, we've come a long way from those early years of my upbringing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did do 2 4 steps and 2 5 steps. And the problem was that I never got to the root cause of me in those. And we're going to talk about the columns in a little bit and some other stuff. But, you know, the problem was all I did was continue that inventory of what you did, how you did, what you took, da 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 da, you. And there was no inward reflection or inflection on me. You know, I stopped at that third column and that stuff swirled around in my head. And I'm like, if I'm not feeling any relief, I'm that kind of guy. I'm not going to do something if there's no output or result from doing it. You know, I'm just, why put the effort in? It didn't work. That's where my mind was after being sober for about 6 years. You know, it didn't work, so why bother? You know, and the problem was that I wasn't taken through the steps as they're outlined. My experience. Other people may have different ones, but this was my particular experience. And me and my one lens here are going to try to do this. So what do I need to do with this? You know, how do I get to look at myself, you know, from the inside out and be completely and utterly objectionable about how I live life and how I treated other people? You know, unfortunately, the big book, you know, from pretty much the 4th step on, tells me what the step is, how I do it, and the results I get from it and the consequences that happen if I don't. You know, the pain that I will suffer. And believe you me, I suffered that pain in more than one way. And the reason I get very passionate about this is because I don't want anyone else to ever walk into Alcoholics Anonymous and not feel the full benefit or full effect of recovery in all its different forms and fashions. I don't want anyone else to struggle, to white-knuckle it, to buckle under. You know, yes, there are moments and times when I needed to do that because that's all I could do. But in the long and over a period of time, that's only going to work for a very specific and brief time. And eventually I'm going to explode and wind up causing more damage and wrecking other people's lives while, again, I'm stone cold sober. We'll get to this later on, but most of my non-step, most of the people on my 8-step were after I sobered up. They weren't, you know, before I got here. You know, maybe different reasons for it. I don't know, youth and whatever, but, you know, regardless, it's not a place I want to be. You know, it's uncomfortable going to, you know, sitting in meetings where I'm hating these people. I'm just not, I am just resentful. I am just full of everything. I don't like you people. And I don't mean you people specifically. And I don't mean Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, this is just where my lens was. Literally. Lens, get it? Anyway, wow, these are throwing these out later. So what do? You know, I start on a personal inventory. You know, this was step 4. And then Bill talks about, you know, giving us some metaphors about a fact-finding, fact-facing mission. And that's what this is about. If you swap a couple words, again, a few that I did not like. I'm sorry, this is on page 64, the first full paragraph. The one that starts with a second line with the italics. You know, so I'm on a fact-finding, which I've been taught is searching, and a fact-facing, which is fearless. And if I swap the word out for moral for truth, I'm just looking for what are the obstacles? What's getting in my own way? What's harming me that's causing me to harm other people? You know, and again, I do the same exact thing with my life. I search out the flaws in my makeup, not the other person's, which manifested in various ways and consider its common manifestations. The 12 and 12 gets really great about breaking down the manifestations. And I've been taught that I have three basic manifestations of self. I have a social instinct, a security instinct, and a sexual instinct. If you mess with, interfere, or threaten one or three of those, I'm going to react typically in one of three or all three ways. I'm going to resent you, I'm going to fear you, and I'm going to want to harm you. Or maybe all at the same time, depending on what I perceive the injustice to be. So, you know, we start out with talking about resentments and inventorying that. And, you know, resentment, as we've all heard before, many of us, is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. You know, and I remember there was a guy that I asked to sponsor me because he was a big, you know, he's a big book guru, you know, step whatever. You know, he was the big kahuna at this meeting we were going to. It was kind of the premier big book meeting at the time in the area. And I asked this guy to sponsor me. And, you know, we went to this little back room to have a little powwow and talk. And he was asking me about, you know, where I'd been, what my journey in AA has been so far. He actually asked me, you know, how would I define God, and, you know, without, you know, really thinking about it, I gave him a couple adjectives. And I don't know, somehow we got talking about the 4-step, and he's like, have you ever done one? And I'm like, well, yeah, sort of, I kind of tried and didn't really work. But I said, I do many 4-steps. And, you know, when I talk to some people over the phone and my network and, you know, stay connected, and he's like, wait a second, you know, let's look at what inventory means. It's a written list of items. You know, it's something that I put down on black and white. I list them on paper. You know, whatever you're doing, I don't know what that is. You know, if it's helping, that is great. But that's not, you know, let's be clear, that's not a 4-step. And it has nothing to do with what this is about. Because usually, in honesty, what was I doing? I was calling and bitching about what other people were doing to me. I was still in that mindset that they were the problem. You were the problem. Everyone else was the problem. You know, I was a complete innocent victim bystander in every encounter I ever had in my entire life. You know, if you had been me, if you did, it's crazy. The stupidity and insanity of it. So, you know, I'm losing pages here. So, you know, I start with resentment. And then, you know, I look at this chart that's on page 65. And I stared at this thing for years. I'm like, what is this thing about? I mean, it still cracks me up. You know, Mrs. Brown, she's a nut. She snubbed me. Still, that one makes me laugh to this day. And, you know, looking at the logistics. Oh, he's resentful because, you know, how dare, you know, he tell his wife or she tell his wife that he's having an affair. I mean, what? Man, that just burned me up. Anyway, I had no one to take me through this and instruct me what the first column was. You know, that I'm looking at the person that I'm resentful at. You know, looking at the cause. And then how it affects my self-esteem, that third column. But I want to back up for a second, because what always intimidated me, particularly early on when I came in, when I would hear the four step, I heard a lot of people share that they had been writing their four step for a year. Mm-hmm. 6 months. Oh yeah, it was bad. And here's the thing. I was like, man, how am I going to compete with that? You know, I have to come up with the great American fourth step. My fourth step has to be the best fourth step ever written. It's got to be letter perfect. You know, it's going to be a manuscript. I'm going to sell it. You know, it's going to make millions of dollars. That's not why I do this. You know, and it has nothing to do with that. But again, when your brain isn't right and you don't know what recovery is or what it looks like and you don't have the proper guides, your mind just goes in all sorts of different directions. And you just grab on to whatever your perception is and you hold on to, well, at least my experience, let me back up. I hold on to that and I just interpret and reinterpret and, you know, go to 12 and 12 meetings and, man, I can wax poetic about so many things where I have absolutely no experience doing any of this work. I remember being 3 months sober and being at a 12 and 12 meeting going, and I'm just back there and I'm giving, you know, I wish there was a recording of that. I would love to listen to me back then. And, you know, all my worldly wisdom about Alcoholics Anonymous and recovery at that point, because it had to be just completely and utterly bonkers. I'm sure it was. I'd put money on it. But, you know, there's another, you know, part to this too, is that, again, I believe it's quick, simple, and, you know, deliberate as well. And it doesn't have to take a whole lot of time. You know, because I look at our early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I see what those guys went through. And, you know, they didn't inventory at the drop of a hat. You look at Dr. Bob's story, for instance, and the number of alcoholics that he worked with in 15 years. Do you think he had the opportunity to do a fourth step every 4 months or every 2 weeks? Or, you know, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing to do and reanalyze and reassess. I'm just saying, you know, my goal is to do other things and to live these principles to the best of my ability out there. You know, if I need to take a break and step back and, you know, there's certain things that are cropping up I need to look at, that's fine. But, you know, my experience is, and I watched this happen, and I'll get to it a little bit more, but I gotta move on at a certain point. You know, my job is to look backward, but to live life forward. And if I'm always, you know, rehashing what happened before, how can I possibly live in the present? You know, I don't know. I don't feel it's a healthy behavior. And that's my opinion. And let me just preface and say, I am not a guru. I am not an expert. I am nothing more than a drunk who's trying to stay sober one day at a time as a member of this fellowship. I've been a card-carrying one since the day I've gotten here, and I haven't walked out of these rooms yet. You know, and despite the fact that you probably should have kicked me out multiple times, you didn't. You kept welcoming me back. And, you know, wherever I was, you just said, hey, keep coming, we'll see you tomorrow. You know, I even ranted at a meeting last week. And anyway, they all were joking about, you know, how my rant from the week before. So anyway, but, you know, if I look at the word resentment, you know, it's the whole process of I'm rethinking or refilling something that happened before. And, you know, my instructions were pretty clear, you know, active resentments. And I watched, there was a period of time where there was one group of people, they're like, write down every memory you've ever had since, you know, you can consciously remember them. And there was one, and again, do whatever your sponsor tells you to do. You know, just follow that instruction. I'm just talking about my experience and what I've watched happen. And I remember this one guy, he had, I don't know, 1,000-page notebook. And he was, again, he was like, we're like, Jimmy, when are you going to be done with this four step? Like, what is... He's like, no, I still have to go back, and I got all this stuff. And he's, like, writing viciously. it got to a point where this poor guy, you know, eventually drank because he couldn't, you know, he wasn't moving forward. He wasn't progressing. And that's my point with this, you know, that I am not trying to stay trapped in a particular time. I'm really trying to look carefully and meticulously, but also, you know, write down very generic things in order to discover who I am and the way I behaved. And, you know, and resentments were a big part of that. And in a matter of a couple pages, you know, the author talks about the fact that I can die from resentment. You know, it talks about them being poisoned. It talks about the fact that it will kill me. You know, that I will die from this. You know, and I've watched it happen. And I've watched it happen in my own life where I'm eating inside out and everybody else is going about their blessed day living a good life. And I'm like, you know, and just so stuck in what my belief is, a particular encounter, a particular relationship, a particular thing, a particular happenstance, circumstance, situation, whatever you want to call it. And the crazy thing about, you know, resentment, and I read this at some point along the way, you know, resentment is like taking poison and waiting for the other person to die. You know, and it eats me up. It will kill me faster than anything else. It will take me so far out of me. And, you know, the crazy thing about doing this inventory is realizing and understanding that I can no longer play the victim. You know, I am now accountable for my actions and behaviors and the way I react and the way I respond to people. You know, I can no longer say it's because of X, Y, or Z. You know, it's all based on, you know, what I've learned about me and not trying to be that guy anymore. You know, not trying to live this particular behavior pattern. Because nothing I ever did, and I might have said this before, you know, before I got here, ever led to any good. You know, it never led to any happiness. No matter how much I thought it was being happy and living a bon homme lifestyle, it just wasn't working. You know, because I was always just escaping whatever the moment was. I was never living in it. I was running away all the time. And what these steps, in particular the fourth step, started to help me to do was to realize that I can no longer do that. You know, step back, assess, analyze, you know, see what's sticking. And there are times where I still really go back to those manifestations of self when I'm really stuck in a particular point. After inventorying and reviewing and talking it over, it's like, why is this still coming up? What instinct of self, what manifestation of self is really being? And usually that helps uncover it. You know, money, you know, what's the old saying? Sex and checks, you know, get us into trouble all the time. You know, and it's so unbelievably true. But, you know, there are truths in this because, and again, the insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. So if I look at those three columns, you know, it flips over. And the problem, I think, for me is that I'm a visual guy. You know, I need things pretty well spelled out. Somebody said, you know, I'm certainly not the sharpest tool in the shed. I'm a few sandwiches short of a picnic, you know, whatever phrase you want to use. Like, I'm not a bright guy, you know. And so it wasn't until I saw that on page 67 that I'm really starting to look at my end of it. You know, that, you know, well, even at the bottom, well, I'll go into page 67, you know, that when I'm looking at these relationships, you know, I avoid retaliation or argument. I wouldn't trick sick people. Oh, here we go. I'm sorry. I can't see without my glasses. It's the second full paragraph down on page 67. Okay, thanks. See if these work. Thank you, though. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where we had been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours and not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them in black and white. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. And, you know, it's pretty much that simple. I know I try to keep it very basic, very simple, because most good ideas are simple. You know, and Bill and Bob, according to what we learn, their last conversation before Dr. Bob passed was that Dr. Bob reportedly said to Bill, don't mess this up with Freudian concepts. you know, and I really need to get this to brass tacks, because I will go off and splinter, and I will continue. And I watch this too, people just chasing fourth-step workshops after fourth-step workshops. I'm starting a new fourth, this is where I'm coming to, and never actually doing it. You know, at some point I got to put pen down and realize that I've done the best. I've been as honest and thorough as I possibly can at that particular moment. And if I miss something, I always have an opportunity to go back. I have the 10-step, and if I really need to do an extended 10-step, or, you know, just do a 4-step all over, you know, on a particular set of topics or issues or relationships, so be it. You know, then we start to analyze fear. And the thing is, the formula for me, at least from what I've been taught, doesn't change. Those columns remain. You know, that I always start to look at fear and the fears that I have. I used to have a whole like kit of things with the 4-step, and I try not to, you know, overwhelm it, because I like to say it's simple. And then, you know, I used to get in an argument with my old home group, because we used to do these big book workshops, and we would split out, you know, multiple weeks, and, you know, similar to what we do here or what you guys do here. And, you know, I'd always argue with this guy, because he wanted to do, you know, two weeks on the 4-step. And I'm like, but we're telling people, it's simple and uncomplicated, and then we go uncomplicated. So I don't understand what we're trying to do. You know, I've been taught it's the same formula. You know, I list fears. You know, I list the cause. I list what it affects in that third column. And then I, you know, look at, you know, the same types of things in that fourth column. And what I find, particularly with the resentment inventory, is that it doesn't matter the names on that first column, because it's always going to be the same outcome, because I'm always going to do the same things that I did. You know, I'm always going to be that selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate, dishonest, fearful person that's going to lead to all the things that happen in that first column. You know, and I look back and I realize that every relationship I ever had, I was the only common denominator in them. You know, did every girlfriend break up with me because I was such a wonderful catch? You know, did I always have static with, you know, different friends along the way, you know, which always turned out to be the same thing? You know, the names are interchangeable, but I was the constant, because I was always going to do what I did, because I didn't know how else not to do that. I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the disciplines. I didn't have the structure in place. And I'm just kind of moving along, because, you know, we're coming kind of close to the end of the hour. And I do want to hear some of your comments and experiences with this. You know, and sex is the same, you know, principle as well. Where's my piece? You know, even with fear, we trust infinite God, this is page 68, rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. This is the second full paragraph. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? You know, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. And all men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our thinking to what He would have us be. And at once we commence to outgrow fear. And then, you know, the sex inventory. And, you know, what I'm really trying to look at with this one, you know, which starts at the bottom of page 68, flows over to page 69. And, you know, where we've been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got them all down on paper and we looked at it. And then it talks about the sex ideal. And, you know, there's lots of, I'm sure, great experience with that, you know, in this particular room. So I don't want to necessarily take more time with that. But the point is that I'm still analyzing how I treated other people. You know, and, you know, I came in here, you know, sweet innocent kid. I didn't unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, but not me, no. You know, my wife and I started dating, and she's like, you know, you have a really bad habit of flirting with people. And I'm like, no, I don't. No, I don't know what you're talking about. Part of it was I really didn't know. But there was a part of me that kind of did. And, you know, I just played it off that I was just this, you know, stupid, dumb, late bloomer in life when it came to, you know. Anyway, you get where I'm going, you know, so we'll leave it at that. But then, you know, there's more prayer about this, more prayer to remove what's blocking me, more prayer, more conscious contact with the Creator, so that I don't repeat the behaviors, so that I find a way and a path to not get so stuck in them. And, you know, just close with the page 70 at the end, because again, the promises, you know, if we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We commence to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct, and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision in the third step and an inventory in the fourth step of your grosser handicaps, this line kills me, you have made a good beginning. Really? I've done all that work and I'm still at the beginning? Darn you, Alcoholics Anonymous. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And the question I always had with the fifth step, and I'll start winding it down now, is why do I need to do this? If it's between me and God, ain't that good enough? And, you know, the realization is that, you know, you get more light through two windows than one, and sunlight is typically the best disinfectant. And, you know, my problem was, again, I'm still too attached to my life, and I cannot be objective about me. The one thing that I typically cannot be objective about. I've gotten better, I've improved, I've enhanced, but at the end of the day, I still sometimes want what I want, and I'm still sometimes driven by certain shortcomings and character defects because I'm of the human. I am just still human, and that will never change. You know, so I need other people to help me extract the truth about what I'm going through and how I'm behaving. And I'll never forget, you know, I've had the same sponsor now for, I can't even remember how long Keith and I have been a pair, but I'll never forget, we were talking about something and I'm going on and I can't remember what I said, and he just, you know, stopped and he's like, "So you think you're that important, huh?" And I'm like, "You suck." But he was absolutely right, because I was making it all about me. You know, I was looking at it from my perspective. And what I always try to, you know, ask any fellow alcoholic, whether I'm sponsoring them, whether they're my network, whether I'm friends, and, you know, they're coming to me with something, you know, okay, well, what's your part in it? B, you know, what's your motivation? You know, what was the outcome you were hoping for that you did not get? Because for me, any expectation I have is a premeditated resentment. If I'm expecting something of someone else, there's certain thought process in my mind. And here's the crazy part about it, because, you know, I'm such a spiritual being, you know, emanating. I'm kidding. But, you know, I expect you to read my mind and interpret what I'm thinking so you can, you know, then, you know, proceed to do what I want you to do. And when that doesn't happen, I get very upset. You know, my wife will continually, and we've been getting together for, you know, we celebrate 25 years in October. And, you know, I can't read your mind. I'm like, why not? How come? We've been together so long. Because she can't. And I can't read anyone else's mind. You know, and shouldn't I treat other people with the same amount of kindness that I expect in return? And probably even with, you know, more than that. So, you know, when I look at why I have to do this, you know, because that was my big question. Why? Why? And I think even the 12 and 12 talks about, you know, must we be constantly maudlin about, you know, constantly analyzing. I can't remember the wording, and it's really not important. And, you know, there's a couple lines actually in the 12 and 12 that parry this, you know, and, you know, tell me why. Because we believe that our one-time good character will be revived the minute we quit alcohol. And I can speak from the utmost truth, and in my experience, that did not happen. A, I didn't really have any character when I got here. I may have been a character who developed character. Let's put it that way. You know, and the other part is, if we were pretty nice people all along, except for our drinking, what need is there for a moral inventory now that we are sober? Because left to my own devices, I'm going to look for chaos and confusion and self-destruction. I know how to function with chaos and confusion. I know how to live in, you know, just uncertainty to a certain extent. I know how to blow up my life. I just don't know how to live a sober, you know, one with, you know, peace and ease. You know, being comfortable in my own skin. And it's a constant journey of, you know, rebuilding. You know, and these are only really just the tools of the foundation of the structure that I built. You know, I don't just do a four-step, and I guess this is why I'm coming to it, you know, and just put it down and, you know, just whatever happens with it. You know, I learn certain tools that I carry out into my daily living. You know, to 10, 11, and 12. You know, again, where I can start to see where these things are cropping up, how I'm affecting. You know, there's the same questions that come back up when I'm looking in my 24-hour day program. So, a whole lot more I could say. I was hoping to get a little more into the fifth step, but I'll just close it with that. And just say, you know, it's only because of the tools that I've learned, you know, in the time that I've been here, that I actually wound up celebrating. It was around Thanksgiving. I looked after I heard you celebrated last week, and I looked, and I celebrated a really weird day count. And it was, I'll just put it this way, it was five digits, and they all started with one. You know, it's kind of weird, you know, like, wow, that's, first of all, I never thought I'd live past, you know, the age of 25 before I got here, you know, let alone, you know, 30. And then, you know, to manage to, but again, the grace of God, manage to put together, you know, day after day, week after week, and, you know, month after month, and ultimately year after year. You know, I hope I conveyed something with, you know, some logic, and either that may made a little bit of sense. You know, I know last week I was kind of a little jumbled, but, you know, holidays and a lot of other things going through my mind. But, you know, it's a very, the point with, I think, the fourth and the fifth and, you know, most of the few other steps that follow is that I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to create something new. I don't have to, you know, go to a different book and, you know, do an inventory of that. If you want and that makes you happy, I haven't found it necessary to do that. You know, because ultimately what I've found is that when I'm taking other people through the steps, you know, I'm just relearning more about what I've already been taught. You know, and that's the whole goal of this. And my belief system and what I've been taught is that I'm here just to teach someone else how to do this and to get the benefits of doing so. You know, the problem is that, you know, so many people, I get to the fourth step and I never hear from them. Anyone else have that experience in this room? You know, get them all the way up to the fourth step. You give them, you know, the instructions. You know, you might hear from them one or two times after that and boom. But you know what? I managed to stay sober thanks, you know, to that. You know, it's a win-win for me. I get the benefit. So enough out of me. I'll shut up. Thank you guys for your time and attention. And let's live another day sober and, you know, closer to God. Thanks.